The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 24th of November, 2025. And you're very welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show. It's great to have you on board. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's very much appreciated. And we won't let you down, because over the next 3 hours, we've got the stories, the news that you want to hear. We've got your views and opinions, of course. I'll tell you how you can get them into us shortly. And also, just great conversation. We chat daily to people from around the region and beyond, just about stuff that they've achieved, what's going on in their life, what they're interested in. That's what we do here, and we love it. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or you can give us a call as always, 074 91 25000, or if you want to give us an email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the programme, we are streaming live on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, so you can watch on your mobile devices or your smart TV in your Fire Stick if you're at home. Or we are on Facebook and the X platform. Right, let's see what's in the papers. We'll start with the front of the Derry People Donegal News. A Donegal County Councillor will raise concerns about the money being spent maintaining social housing units with defective concrete due to the lack of a dedicated defective concrete block scheme for local authorities at today's plenary council meeting. Councillor Brian Carr stressed that the council has no choice but to divert funds from the housing maintenance and painting budget, which in turn is causing other properties to reach municipal district areas to suffer. In the motion, the Glenties-based councillor will ask the council to provide details of the total expenditure to date from these budgets in each. I think that's going to be a problem for the council. Maybe it's not. But of course, there's always going to be a crossover, isn't there, between, you know, maybe ceiling leaking or drafty windows and doing a bit of painting to separate precisely what is spent on maintaining DCB council stock versus regular maintenance. I would imagine that would be complicated, but maybe not. We'll see. Councillor Carr will also ask the council to confirm whether they have submitted a claim to the relevant government department seeking reimbursement for this expenditure. And really what this all comes down to is the fact that there is still no scheme at all for social housing. And there are hundreds of you, many of you listening, maybe thousands, who are in houses that are arguably not fit to live in, but it's your social house. And there is a list about people, you know, being moved around and all, but it depends where you are on that list. The Derry News this morning, with offers in the region of £1 million invited, the former Lisna Galvin Leisure Centre site in Derry's Waterside is back on the market, advertised as a prime redevelopment opportunity extending to approximately 2.75 acres. The site is being sold by Lambert Smith Hampton. On to the Nationals now, and a lot of movement since I was last speaking to you in efforts to get some sort of a resolution to the war in Ukraine. There's a 28-point plan that's been put out there. Some within the American administration suggesting it's a very Russian-heavy plan, but the where we're at, and it'd be interesting in your views, especially if you are from Ukraine, and if they don't reach to us, maybe we can reach out to the Ukrainian community. What do you think about this? Because I suppose I'm paraphrasing here, but the way it's been laid out is that the best Ukraine can do at this point, as it sacrifices tens of thousands of soldiers, is slow down the approach of Russia. And what Russia can do is they can batter away, but they're losing hundreds of thousands of soldiers to achieve what? Certainly not their goal of taking over Ukraine. So it can rumble on as it is in perpetuity. Russia arguably will never be pushed back unless there's some sort of a full-scale global situation. And with the backing of America, which I would say is an asterisk at this point, and the EU, Ukraine are just effectively holding Russian lines with some slippage. It's a stalemate, effectively. And there are only a handful of solutions, one of them being that Russia pulls completely out of Ukraine. Ukraine loses no territory. That is not simply ever going to happen, it seems, at this point, because Russia has to have some sort of a victory. Or they draw a line where the front line is right now, and that's part of the plan. Russia takes the Donbass, Crimea, and other areas that it has, which is a small percentage of Ukraine as a whole, and the international community recognise it as Russian. The Ukrainians have to reduce their army down to 600,000 and commit to never join the NATO organisation. So that's really the plan that's on the table. And it seems to be that the Ukrainians are having to take this seriously because from the language that's not being said directly, but it's being expressed sort of in a different way, is that the US are not going to continue to support Ukraine unless they actually negotiate and take this deal eventually. And Donald Trump has criticized Ukraine for what he said was a lack of gratitude to the United States, as Ukraine, US and European officials met in Geneva yesterday to discuss a draft plan to end the war. Now, I understand where they're coming from, this coverage. There might be some commentary on social media, but generally speaking, from what I've seen, America is being quite cordial towards the Ukraine and vice versa. The Ukraine leadership very grateful to the US and personally to Donald Trump. So I think they've picked out a bit of negativity here. But anyway, Kyiv and its allies voiced alarm about major concessions to Russia in the 28-point plan, championed by the US president, and pressed for changes. European officials joined the US and Ukraine delegations for talks late yesterday after crafting a modified version of the US plan for the Ukraine. The alternative plan pushes back on proposed territorial concessions and limits to Kyiv's armed forces. So somewhere in there, hopefully there is a deal, because, you know, we can sit here where we are and sort of say, oh, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that, or they should do this. But it's not our sons, primarily, it's not our sons that are being sent out to be cannon fodder, effectively and literally. You know, millions of young men and women, but mostly young men, have died for what? You heard in the news there, I thought reiterating, the Irish Independent, just as we need it, home heating oil prices are going through the roof. This is another winter nightmare, really. You know, the bills are stacking up. The cost of home heating oil has spiked just as the country is being hit by a cold snap. It now costs €80 more to buy 1,000 litres of heating oil than a month ago. Oil distributors blame US sanctions on Russian oil companies and a surge in demand worldwide for oil. And the gap between the cost of 1,000 litres in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland has widened to €300. But I thought it was about sanctions and distribution. How could the gap widen? I presume sanctions and distribution affect the North as much as the South. Maybe it's not about that at all, is it? Well, it now costs €980 on average across the country for a 1,000-litre fill. This is up from €900 on average on October 21. According to two oil price comparison websites, oilprices.ie and cheapestoil.ie, around 1 million households use kerosene-based heating oil to keep their homes warm. We rely on it, of course, because we don't use much gas up here as well. But as I say, why would the gap widen between the South and the North if it was about sanctions and distribution? That doesn't make sense, does it? Maybe it's about us being gouged again in the South. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and this will be good news for some who are very fond of cash and access to it. The Taoiseach is set to sign a law forcing the provision of cash machines nationwide in an effort to reverse the trend of disappearing ATMs. Simon Harris will sign the regulations underpinning the Finance Provision of Access to Cash Infrastructure Act as early as today. The measures are designed to ensure people continue to have reliable access to cash withdrawal and deposit services, regardless of where they live. This will be Mr. Harris's first major act as finance minister, ensuring people and businesses have guaranteed access to cash. He didn't introduce this. He's just taken over. This was already in situ. It's understood the central bank has now completed a review into the level of ATM cover in the state, paving the way for the Taoiseach to bring the measure into force. So that will continue to enshrine your access to the withdrawal and deposit of cash, for those of you who still feel that cash is king and that is important. The Hezbollah killer of Donegal peacekeeper Private Sean Rooney looks set to get away with murder. And I just can only imagine what Sean's family feel when they read headlines like this. I would hope they're familiar with the developments, even if they're hard to hear long before they're printed in the press. But anyway, frustrated Irish diplomats say the Lebanese government has made little or no progress in locating Mohammed Ayad, and the chances of bringing him to justice are slim. They are absolutely convinced he's hiding out in Iran, who financed the Hezbollah terror group and has long left South Lebanon where he lived. The gunman was arrested and detained in custody a few months after the December 14th, 2022 UN convoy shooting in which Sean Rooney died and three of his colleagues were injured. But he was freed by the Lebanese authorities over a year ago on so-called medical grounds and never appeared at his trial on July 28th last, when he was given the death sentence by a military tribunal in his absence. So it seems that he has gone into the bowels of Iran. And if that is the case, unlikely to ever face justice. The Irish Sun this morning: a proposed overhaul of Ireland's asylum system would see rules around citizenship and family reunification tightened. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan is set to bring three different memos to Cabinet this week for consideration. The changes would mean international protection applicants are forced to prove they are self-sufficient and do not owe any debt to the state, which is similar to what Irish people travelling to other countries must prove. It, and this is if they want to become citizens. And refugees would have to be resident in Ireland for 5 years instead of the current three to apply for citizenship, which is still far short of what is happening in Britain. They're pushing it out to 20, even 30 years. So that does make Ireland a better destination if you wish to get citizenship of Europe. Those who apply for citizenship would also have to prove they have not received social welfare payments for 2 years before applying. Refugees' attempts to gain citizenship could also be in jeopardy if they have previously lived here without valid immigration permission. So it's still at the talking point at Cabinet stage. And apparently over in Britain, pubs are ditching Guinness because they claim the Dublin beer is too expensive. Landlords in Britain are turning to alternative Irish stouts to cut prices. One insider said Guinness is incredibly expensive, and you've got nowhere to turn in a negotiation. Pubs are paying about a fifth less, 148 to 153 euro, for an 88-pint keg of Murphy's than for Guinness, which costs 170 to 176 euro. James Nye, MD of Anglican Country Inns, said he switched some of his pubs to Murphy's. I don't know how anyone can drink any of that stuff either, to be honest. It's just something I couldn't tolerate the taste of. But for some, it's like nectar. But anyway, maybe it's changing over in Britain. 50 of the 303 school children abducted from a Catholic school in north central Nigeria's Niger state have escaped captivity and are now with their families, the school authorities said recently, bringing relief to some distraught families after one of the largest school abductions in Nigeria's history. But still, there's a great deal of anguish for the families and for the people involved in this, for those that are still in captivity. There's staff also that were taken. Sister Mary T. Barron is a Superior General of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of Apostles, and originally, of course, from here in County Donegal. Sister Mary, sorry to be speaking to you. This is, under these circumstances, this is devastating news, isn't it?
Yes, Greg, thank you for speaking to me this morning and bringing attention to this awful situation. Yes, it's been a nightmare really for that community in Papery and for our own sisters, who are really trying to do all they can and cooperate with the security services to try to find all those that have been taken.
What do we know of how events unfold at St. Mary's Catholic Primary and Secondary Schools in Papery that you mentioned?
Sorry, Greg, I didn't catch the question.
What? How did events unfold at the schools in terms of the kidnapping of the children and staff, sister?
Okay, it was early Friday morning, about 1 o'clock in the morning, when these bandits arrived at the school. And when they arrive on motorbikes in huge numbers. So you're talking maybe 100 with motorbikes and guns. And they entered the school compound. Towards the primary school end, and then just gradually moved along the compound from dormitory to dormitory. trying to gather as many of the children and staff that were possible. And then some of the children had, particularly the secondary school children, tried to escape, jumped the wall, ran into the bush, and they would be some of the ones that were returned home safely the next day.
I mean, the abduction and actually being held captive is bad enough. I can only imagine the terror that was felt, the noise, the shouting, the threats. I mean, it's unimaginable. There are no words, are there?
No, I've had many messages from people, and that's what they say. There are just no words. No words can capture the feeling that all those people endured on Friday morning. It is unimaginable. And apparently it lasted for about 3 hours, where they were in the compound going from building to building, gathering people up and obviously beating people to find as many as they could. So yeah, unimaginable, and no words can describe it.
Certainly it's rare at this scale, but how often do we see these types of abductions, and what is the aim here?
I think, you know, we don't hear a lot of reports of these type of incidents. And there was an incident earlier in the week. There was a kidnapping from a different school in one of the other northern states. Mass abductions are not so common, but they have happened. But kidnappings in general are quite common. It's a very complex situation, and depending on where you are in the country, the aim can be very different. To date, there's been no, you know, contact with the group that have taken the children and the staff. So even begin to speculate about what the aim is, it's not helpful. And also, we're not in a position to be able to give any information.
I understand. And as you say, it can be anything, presumably from leverage to try and draw attention, because the eyes of the world have been focused somewhat on Nigeria, given recent comments by the American administration.
Yeah, certainly in the last couple of weeks, there's been much more attention. This is something that we've been conscious of, not just in Nigeria, and in some different countries in Africa. There are serious issues, and, you know, our sisters in many of the countries where we are live in extremely difficult situations where they can be attacked at any point. And the world is not aware of this. And I think in the past few weeks, there certainly has been a lot more attention on Nigeria. And for me, having attention on this particular kidnapping and on the situation in general is a positive thing to try and help. You know, what more can we as the world, a global community, what can be done to help? Like, what child, you know, deserves to go to school and be taken in hostage and, you know, in such traumatic circumstances, just off. So every child deserves, as Pope Leo said yesterday, you know, we... that all children can have access to safe and secure education. So what can the world do to help that happen in different countries where it's not happening?
And of course, Pope Leo has called for the immediate release of the school children. That's a view we all share, any right-minded person would. And also, and I'm sure you're encouraging people to pray for their safety whilst in captivity, but of course, ultimately for them to be returned to the loving arms of their families.
Absolutely. And, you know, we feel quite powerless, you know, in situations like this. When somebody's kidnapped, it's very difficult to be, you know, to be worrying about them and not having the power to do anything. But my hope is, yes, we pray for their safe return. But also, the more we get this into the public eye, people who do have power, people who do have influence, can perhaps put pressure on people who can make an impact and who can help and who can really keep the eyes on this situation, because in 2 or 3 days it'll be out of the news, and please God, they'll be returned before then. But if not, it goes out of the news and it just becomes an even more painful situation where you feel nobody's actually helping, nobody's trying to do anything. So for me, we make this appeal for prayer, but also if anyone is in a position to do something, please act, please do something.
What is the wider situation, you know, from your knowledge in Nigeria as it relates to sort of the treatment of Christians more generally?
Again, this is a coming out. Generally, visiting our communities was in 2022, and at that time, I could sense the tension.
The line broke down just as you were about to answer that question, but it's returned now. Sister Mary, could you just start again and just tell us what the situation is for Christians in Nigeria?
Yeah, I would say this is a very sensitive question that has, you know, been getting some airplay in recent weeks, and it's a very contested response, I think. And for me, as somebody who doesn't live in the country, my experiences from visiting the country, and, you know, many of our sisters, we have 150 sisters who are from Nigeria. But my own personal experience, I visited Nigeria in 2022, where I visited many parts of the country, including the north. And the sense of tension, just for ordinary people living in Nigeria, going out every day. And that is not to do with their faith. It's just there's an awful lot of violent crime. There's a lot of kidnappings. There's a lot of armed robberies. So that's a general reality for the country as a whole, and getting worse. There are some then areas where it's probably less safe to be a Christian, you know, and that has been, that's not only Nigeria. We have other countries where it's becoming less safe to be a Christian practicing their faith. So I'm not really in a position to give any broader answer than that.
No, I understand. But in terms of if that is the case, as you stated, and I'm sure it is, what then needs to be the reaction within the country itself or the international sort of response to something like that, if you believe there is a role to be played there? Because, you know, I think we don't want to be living in a world where people living in a country, you know, can't freely practice their religion peacefully.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's probably many countries in the world where freedom of religion is not a value that's lived in the country. I think what, for me, the situation in Nigeria, the tensions that people live with on a daily basis, the fear that people live with, you know, the schools are being closed now in the north of Nigeria because of this situation. What more can be done? I'm not a politician. I'm not a diplomat. And I know it's always said when the problem is internal in a country.
Okay, we've lost the line there. Sorry, we have lost you, Sister Mary. The line is dropping in and out. I just want to say thank you very much for joining us. And we are thinking of your colleagues and obviously the children, and we wish they are released as soon as is possible. And I know you did want to speak to us with a view to getting the information out there, but also if people are inclined to pray, to pray for these young people and their teachers.
Thank you very much, Greg. I'm sorry about the line. It's rural Ghana.
I understand that. That's no problem whatsoever. That was Sister Mary T. Barron, Superior General of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of Apostles. And the line was playing up a little bit for us, but she was speaking to us from rural Ghana, which is remarkable in this day and age that we can connect with such quality. The fact that the line held up as it did is really quite remarkable. And Sister Mary T. Barron is from Galdana, near Manor Cunningham, as you would know. And she's asking for you, if you are inclined to pray or even not, send positive thoughts to those hundreds of children and staff who were taken. And it's a horrible, horrible scenario to try and imagine what it must have been like. The motorbikes, the screaming, the rounding up, it's just horrendous. And I think everyone needs to consider as well, too, that it is becoming increasingly difficult in certain parts of the world to simply just be a Christian and learn in a Christian school or go to a mass, which is seemingly becoming more and more perilous in certain parts of Nigeria, at least. Welcome back to the programme. We say good morning now to Gemma, who works at Seabound Engineering and found a Norwal on Sweet Nelly's Beach. And a Norwal is... Good morning, Gemma.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes. Go ahead. Talk to me about this mammal that you found. It is it's a whale, effectively. Well, not effectively, literally, isn't it?
It is a whale. I have a Belgian Malinois dog. I don't know if you know them, but high energetic dog. And so we spend every lunchtime on the beach, 365 Christmas Day. So we were down on the beach on Friday the 14th, as usual, at 12 o'clock. And that week, the weather was extremely, extremely rough. There was a lot of sea foam on the beach, which was really unusual. So that showed the agitation of the water and the waves. Now, the beach is broken up into two sides. So the first part's a shallow beach, and the main beach then would be a lot deeper. So Skylar was swimming. It got a bit rough, so we decided to go to the shallow side of the beach. And Skylar went over to something. I thought it was a rock. Whenever I went over and looked, I'd seen this species there. We didn't know what it was. I knew it wasn't a seal, and I took a really short video, just a 16-second video, and we had to get back to work. So I had attached the video and sent it to the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group. But unfortunately, the video didn't attach, but the email did go to them. And the following day, I went back to the beach and I met Elena, from has volunteered with Irish Wildlife and Dolphin Group. And she was there, and she was on the phone with the Irish Whale and Dolphin authorities. And we were taking photographs, and we were trying to get... We had nothing with us. We had a measuring tape. We hadn't PPE or anything. So we were trying to get the size of the mammal. So we knew it was about 10 to 11 foot. After we had left, we were kind of... I was showing it to my husband, and he was like, it's a pygmy sperm whale. Or a beluga, and I was like, absolutely not. I thought it was like a harbour porpoise, but there was no dorsal fin there. And then I thought maybe because of the way it was lying, I couldn't see it. But I knew from Elena, there was kind of an air of excitement, anticipation there, but she was staying very tight-lipped. And I said, you know, do we have any idea what this is? And she was like, no, we don't, but we think this might be something special. This might be a rare species. And she says, it's really important that we can get some photographs inside its mouth. So we got the mouth pried open, and I took photographs inside the mouth. And what astonished me, I took photographs of the upper jaw, the lower jaw. There's absolutely no teeth there whatsoever.
So that,
no teeth.
That limits it then to what it could be. That point, was it confirmed? Is this very rare in these waters, i.e. I don't think we've ever... have we ever seen a Norwal washed up on Irish waters?
Never in history.
Wowzers,
okay. It's so rare that even as the photographs were being sent to the specialists, they, you know, I learned a week later, they still did not believe it was narwhal. They said it was far too improbable. It was impossible. Not only have they never, ever in history been washed up on Ireland, they've never even been sighted off Ireland. And a lot of people, which is just a couple of questions to answer because I've had these questions put to me, a lot of people, for one, did not believe they existed. They thought that they were like an animal that didn't really exist. What got me, I suppose, when I researched the narwhal, and it put me straight off, is it's known as a toothed whale. And when I seen it had absolutely no teeth whatsoever, and I thought it must only be eating jellyfish or squid, but they actually do eat, the females do not have a tooth, a tusk, as we know, that unicorn-like tusk that we see. It's only the males that have that. So the females, they do have a couple of canine, but they don't even protrude from the gum. The males have just two canine teeth, and the left tooth is what grows into the 10-foot unicorn.
Do we know what the function of that tusk is?
We do and we don't. It is ivory. So it is. Right. It is ivory. And it's restricted in many countries as it should be. It has about 50 million nerve endings. So they believe it's as part of fermenting. It's quite flexible. It can sense the temperatures and things. So they do have ideas of what it's used for. But again, they eat the same as the females, and the females actually eat halibut, they eat cod, they eat krill, they eat crab, which is astonishing for an animal that has no teeth, but they actually basically just, they like a Hoover, suction it up.
So given the condition of the animal once it was washed up, I presume it's likely that it perished off our coast or relatively close to Ireland. Hardly did it drift down from its native waters to be washed up, because you'd imagine it would have been, you know, other creatures would have attacked it or eaten it or whatever it might be. But it is a fully formed, not too disfigured.
100%. When I took the video on the Friday, it had absolutely no injuries at all. Yeah. There hadn't been a bird. There hadn't been any scavengers near. To me, it looked very healthy. It looked to me fat, like as in
well fed.
You know, I didn't look to me underweight or anything. I would say, do not know, but to me, I would say it was only deceased for maybe hours. And I think it possibly did die from beaching on Sweet Nellies. Now, how it got this far south, again, you know, we can go into things like climate change. One of their main preys is orca, killer whales. And we know with climate change that the ice is dissipating, so the orcas are able to access areas that are previously blocked by ice. So that leads them to follow the prey further south, and narwhals is one of their main prey. Even given that it would go so far south, they would never come further than 60 longitude. We're sitting at about 55. But I would say a combination between it being hunted and just completely going off course, and with the extreme weather that we had, that the poor wee girl just... It's really, really heartbreaking. I know it's an astonishing find. It's not something we want to find a lot of. It's quite sad. It would be really, really interesting as you do more research in Cork to find out, the last week or two of its journey.
It'll be because, of course, to what was it eating? Of course, the stomach will be very interesting.
We do know from its stomach that it was carrying a heavy parasitic burden, but that was not its cause of death.
Yeah, but in terms of the food that's in it, because that will give us some indication potentially of was it feeding off our coast? We surely would get some idea, no?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. Very, very good point, Greg. Was it eating species that are found more commonly here? They did say that it was quite underweight. Again,
is there any possibility that this was snared in nets or something and disposed of?
No, I don't. Absolutely don't think that. There's so much. The more research you do between climate change, there's also a thing there where we talk about the Northern Lights. We had the Northern Lights in Greencastle that week in Shrove. And there is a lot of research now being done with the Northern Lights and that magnetic field of it coming further south that does disrupt things like birds, bees and whales because that's their GPS,
field. We often look for a reason and nature is complex and we only have a fraction of an understanding of it. It could literally just be a quirk of nature and coincidence that it just happened to meet our tiny little rock off the west coast of... it'll be very interesting. I hope I remember now to find out, or maybe you might if you get any news from Cork, because I know it's down there in the regional laboratory. It'd be very interesting to learn a little bit more about this, I think, because we do have, obviously, given our location, an interest in what's happening off our coast. Mm. But incredibly, incredibly rare. It's never happened before.
Ever.
So it is remarkable. And we appreciate, Gemma, you talking to us about it. And we had some images there. We had an image of one of it with a male in its natural surroundings. And then, of course, where it shouldn't be on the beach. But as I say, nature can
And just for people to know as well, there was a couple of people thought that somebody had stolen its tusk. The female doesn't have tusks.
Yeah.
If we go back from the 1500s, there's been 10 strandings in the west of Europe, only 4 females in history in the west of Europe, 2 sightings in the Hebrides and Aberdeenshire years ago, going back to 1949. There has never been a sighting off the Irish coast. There has never been an accidental caption in net. There's never been anything. So that shows how extremely rare this is. And it will go down in history, you know, as a species that it was found in Greencastle.
I don't know, it's not important, but you won't go down in history having found it because you can't send an email, can you?
You know what? That's just right and cheeky there now, Greg. I'm kind of mortal enough about all that there because I was going to be famous and... I was sure I attached that there, but they're not going to be naming it Gemma or Scaler after the dog.
Well, come here, it's on the record that you got first sight of it. We appreciate.
We got first sight. Yeah. At least we got a sight of it before it had any damage or any scavenging done to it. I'm just delighted that it was found. I'm delighted that we're getting to do the research. I hope again that this isn't something that is going to become common. But I 100% will assure you that I will keep in touch with you
brilliant,
with all information that they find. And again, brilliant question. What's in the stomach? How long could it have been travelling until it got here? Very sad. It is. It's got the cutest wee face and it's got a lovely wee smile if you look at it. An amazing discovery. And do you know what? As sad as these things are, it means that we will learn a lot more.
And the reason why we're lucky is it would have perished in any case, but it could have head south of Ireland and been eaten by other. We've had the reason where the luck is, we've an opportunity because we've got it in good condition on our shores. And this will actually feed into a greater understanding, not just in our little part of the world, but more generally into the narwhal whale. So it is actually really significant from a scientific point of view. Gemma, thank you so much for your time. Stay in touch. We do appreciate it. That's Gemma, who initially found that narwhal on the Sweet Nellie's Beach. Did you see it, perhaps? Councillor Sandra Duffy is a Sinn Féin councillor in the Derry City and Strabane District Council and joins me now. Thanks for joining me, Sandra. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
It's good to have you with us. Right, you've been highlighting an incident last week. A taxi was targeted. Talk to us about what happened.
Yeah, so it has been ongoing, Greg, for a few weeks where we have had a small group, and I'm going to say they're children because they are their children. They're probably no more than late primary school, early secondary school age, and it's a very small number, but they are continuing to target vehicles that are driving past Bradley Pass, which is an area in Ballyarnet. They're throwing muck bombs at cars, taxis, and buses. And it's causing a bit of fear in the area. So last weekend, the buses have been attacked and they had decided that they weren't going to run buses after 6 o'clock in that area anymore. We had done an awful amount of negotiation with Translink last week, local community leaders, community safety team, community restorative justice and on-street youth work had all engaged in trying to get the buses back on. We had an agreement that the buses would come back. And then on Friday evening, when I was travelling myself in a taxi, the taxi was attacked with muck bombs in the very same area where we had agreed that there would be no more antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, and we can see from the images images you provided with us, quite a dent over the back left wheel, which, I mean, if that was the windscreen or the side window, I mean,
yes.
You know, it's the damage to the vehicle is bad in and of itself, but I can only imagine what it's like to be driving and hear this wallop.
Absolutely. Myself and the taxi driver, we were having a chat, and these bangs came, and it was very frightening for the taxi driver because he didn't know what was happening. But the weekend prior to that, there was a taxi driver who had his windshield broken, smashed because of the muck bombs. So he was off the road. It's really dangerous, Greg, because it is a road safety concern. You're coming up to a busy junction there. If you lose control of your car, if you lose control of a bus with a lot of people in it, the dangers that poses. Mm. And we just want to make it really clear to some of the children who are involved, and particularly their parents, the dangers of what's going on, the implications of what might happen. And we don't want to escalate this day it becomes a police matter. But at this stage, a broken windscreen on a taxi and buses being taken out of the area does become a police matter.
Well,
because
it affects the whole community.
Firstly,
it's illegal. It's very, very dangerous, and it affects an entire community because, you know, public transport and the very important taxi services, if they're lost, it affects everyone. So, but how do you get a handle on this? I mean, obviously, you can appeal. But does the community need to come together and say, well, what's going on? Is it, you know, not necessarily saying, oh, it's your kids, but come together, have a meeting and saying, right, whatever we need to do, whoever we need to talk to, this has to stop because we're shooting ourselves in the foot here.
Absolutely. I think that what we have done over the last wee while, addressing different issues around scrambler bikes, around fireworks, we come together as a community. So I think that this week we will be engaging again with TransLink, but we will be trying as a community, and particularly our youth workers who are on the ground, trying to impress upon the young people involved how dangerous this is. And then on a wider level, talk to the parents and the guardians and even the grandparents who are in the area, trying to make sure that they know the dangers that this poses. And it's not about a crack. It's not about a fun. It's somebody's livelihood. Somebody could lose their life. They themselves are putting themselves in danger. And we just want to get that message across to people so that they stop these activities, because it is really dangerous, and the impact for the community, as you say, a loss of a bus service, a loss of taxis coming into the area, which we really do depend on, will be devastating, particularly for very vulnerable people who live within the area.
All right, listen, thank you very much indeed. It's counterintuitive. There's no logic to it, but I mean, you're destroying your own space potentially. All right then, Councillor Sandra Duffy, thank you very much for your time. Darren on Facebook says, sister paints a lovely picture in Nigeria. I presume sarcastically, are these the people we want in our country? Well, 48% of the Nigerian population are Christian. That's the whole purpose of the conversation, isn't it? So I'm not sure exactly, are you on about Christians fleeing persecution from Nigeria to another Christian country, or are you talking about those that might be responsible for the attacks? Let me know. Greg, I heard on another media outlet earlier that all children that were kidnapped are already free and safe in their parents' arms. Is your interview with Sister Baron pre-recorded? No, it's not. Unfortunately, 50 have been freed, but hundreds other remain in captivity, which is quite worrying. Good morning, Greg. Why aren't you talking about the $45 billion missing in Ukraine? We've enough fish to fry here, to be honest with you, and it's not of any interest to me. But anyway, they go on to say Zelensky and his family and co. are responsible for this money going. The Irish government need to be held responsible handing over our money to the corrupt Ukrainian regime. What we're contributing versus what Europe as a whole and the United States is very, very different. Ukraine, is that in Donegal now? No, it's not. But there are many thousands of Ukrainians living in Donegal, and everything that happens over there in one way or other affects us or the people that are living here. FFS, the national media, is pushing the war news from Ukraine as the government agenda is to break the triple lock and get Irish people into the EU. The war machine. Do you think anyone in Ukraine gives two hoots about what's happening in Ireland or covers Irish news on local radio? Again, what you don't seem to understand is that you talk about the triple lock, right? And what influences the triple lock, or what potentially could influence the triple lock? What's happening in Europe, and what might be dictating what's happening in Europe or allowing people to push a certain agenda? What's happening in the Ukraine? All news is local. And to be honest with you, as that text went on, you started off as if Ukraine has nothing to do with Donegal. And then by the end of it, you answered your own question as to why it's got everything potentially to do with Donegal because of potentially where this could lead. But also the fact that, what do you want to talk about? You know, a pothole up Long Lane all day. Secondly, there's a lot of people from Ukraine living here as well, which might have an interest in that. Okay.